Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Rap Chat. First of all, we'd like to give a shout out to our sponsor, Westland Studios. Check out their website, www.westlandstudiosdublin.com. If you need any ADR, any recording, give Alwyn a shout. He is always on the end of the phone and very helpful. So we've got Tristan Heneu on.
Yeah, Tristan is an actor, director, writer, in different orders depending on what day of the week you meet him. But an incredible talent, a good mate of mine, has to be said.
Full disclosure.
Yeah, so that's, you know, and obviously he's written some really, really interesting shorts over the last couple of years, which have brought him all over the world, frankly. And he's a real talent.
Yeah. Yeah, particularly I really like Today. That's probably my favorite. They're all great, but yeah. Today with John Connors and is it Lawler Roddy?
Roddy,
yeah, amazing actor.
Yeah, so Tristan took time out of his busy schedule, landscaping the Connemara Hills, to come in and have a chat with us. Just coming up to Christmas as well. Just like to give a big thanks to everybody who's been tuning in. You know, we put a lot of time into this, and at Christmas time, it's good to give thanks and praise. So yeah, refer us, I guess, to a filmmaking friend, and you can check us out on SoundCloud.
SoundCloud.com/FNI Rap Chat, and then we're on iTunes and Stitcher, Podcast Addict.
If you're an addict of podcasts, obviously you need to be on that.
The apps are handy. You can listen to it on the go, we were told by many people that we need to get on those platforms. So if there's any other suggestions, just let us know. So yeah, we give you a really enjoyable chat with Tristan Heneu.
Everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Rap Chat as part of Film Network Ireland's podcast. My name is Paul Butler Lennox, and I am with, as ever, the Navin Stallion.
That's me. And Tristan Heneu, thanks very much for coming in.
Pleasure, boys, pleasure.
What was your day like today? Are you working? Are you running around?
I was working, yeah. It was a busy day, cold day working. Yeah, I was working outside today, so my fingers are just about thawed out.
Cool. We just go back to the start. Were you an actor first, or did you always have an eye on kind of being a filmmaker?
No, never had a never not no not really. Mm. I started acting maybe 2010. Yeah, it was about 2010, and it wasn't until a couple of years later that I don't know where it came from. I think it actually came from I stopped drinking, and I was very bored, and I just wrote a script one day on an A4 pad, right. And that was kind of the start of it. I'd never really written anything apart from really bad poetry and a couple of attempts at songs in my teens, but that was it. I'd never really written anything, so I think I was more just bored that right. I just thought I'd write something.
Okay,
and that was the start. Yeah,
and was there an element of being on sets, watching, you know, saying, I could give that a go, maybe.
Did you ever feel, what was your kind of early influences in terms of, I suppose, films and anything kind of, you know, because you're from Galway, is that correct, Tristan?
That's correct, yeah.
and not from Galway City as well.
No,
so,
the Sticks.
What kind of, you know, what, you know.
Movies and stuff.
Yeah, just what kind of influence or infiltrated your household when you were a kid?
Move that mic just a little bit closer to you.
Yeah, it was. British cinema had a big impact on me growing up. We were seeing Rain and Stones when I was young enough. And 24/7, I remember renting with my dad from the local, it was called Rhymers at the time, shop on video. And I had no idea, but it was about boxing, so that's why we rented it. And it was the first Shane Meadows film. And I loved it. And kind of, yeah, I was always lent more towards the kind of British kind of dramas and the Ken Loach after that then. And
Is there a reason for that? Was there like an English connection in your family? Or
No.
No?
No, not really. Just the stories kind of... And then I saw Dead Man's Shoes a few years later and Romeo Brass and stuff, and I just kind of really liked that style of filmmaking.
That type of social drama, yeah, stuff I want to do.
But I was never like obsessed with cinema.
No.
Growing up.
So you weren't like, you don't have like tattoos of Spielberg's.
No, and I never, I didn't own a Super 8 camera. I wasn't running around making little videos. Everyone seems to like, worth their salt, seems to have had a Super 8.
You weren't part of that club, man.
Yeah, 16mm or a Super 8 or one of these. No, I didn't. I kind of wanted to be a DJ more. When I was from my teens,
yeah,
that was the acting thing came years later. Till I worked on a film actually at home when I was 23, or that Tristan Isolde. I did like 5 weeks on that, and it was being around them actors all day. I was James Franco's double for 5 weeks, so it was just watching, sitting around watching. You'd be kind of like, oh, I could do that.
Actually, not
yeah, that'd be kind of cool to do. That was the first time it kind of entered my head. I was like 22. Yeah. Gone off on a rant there.
No, the rants are good.
Was that like, again, was that kind of a learning experience, or were you just kind of having the crack, taking it
off? Oh, I was just having the crack. I had come back from, I've been travelling around Spain with a couple of my mates just camping, and I came back and I had no job, and I got a job labouring with a local builder, and they were having this casting call for extras for this film, and I went up to it and they were looking for someone to be a double for James Franco.
Okay.
And
Tommy Wazoo wasn't available.
No, they had like, it was down to me and three others, and we all kind of had to sit around, and James Franco came in then, and it was kind of like, oh, you know, which guys kind of matches up, and
right.
And then I ended up getting it. It was great, great, cool. Great money, and it was like 4 or 5 weeks work, and it was all shot around my area, and it was fun. So it was just sitting on set all day. I'd have very little to do. I'd have to stand in, and they'd set up the camera, because they couldn't be getting...
Yeah.
him from his trailer or whatever to come and stand, and so you'd be just, and then you'd get to sit around and watch the whole thing kind of go. So it was cool. It was definitely, I was like, it interested me. That was the first time I felt a genuine interest, so it was kind of late.
And you haven't done that since the body standing thing.
No.
So you're kind of like the Ian Wright of filmmakers and actors. Start a bit later and finish strong.
to be seen.
And win one Premier League title.
Did you go to film school at all then?
No.
Or acting school?
No.
No.
I did actually the exact same course that John Connors did, we spoke about before.
Oh,
the,
cool.
the scene study thing with Kathleen Mourner Yates in the Abbey School of that's the same course I did.
And what are your thoughts on acting school, or like, do you think it's necessary, or
Everyone's different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Everyone's different. You see some amazing actors that have trained, you see some amazing actors that haven't trained today. Some people just have instincts that whatever works, but you know, I think an untrained actor could always learn something by going back. I don't think, you know what I mean? Sometimes I wonder, you know, I would never write it off. I sometimes wonder would I or should I train? Because sometimes you don't feel like you've got full control over things. Sometimes, like, it's just kind of, you go into a scene and it's like potluck if it goes okay. You're riding this fine line. What I think if you're trained, you've got
control.
I think
you can misplace it. You can misplace it sometimes. I think people misinterpret kind of insecurity with lack of, you know, there's no control in the environment sometimes when you're working. So I think it's difficult to... I think it's important that you realise that it's about a level of comfort and kind of surrendering yourself to the wave, as aware of what's happening. And you know, it's different for everybody. Some people get that comfort through experience. I mean, even when you look at someone like Daniel Day-Lewis this week saying, you know, a great sadness came over me.
Yeah.
And he's stopping. So, I guess that's a no for a lot of other actors and performers, you know, just find your own comfort, you know.
It's finding that, though, the best way to get it, and I guess whatever works.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about why you felt it was necessary to write. Like, I suppose, what was the inception of you deciding to write your first short that you wrote? Was it specifically for a vehicle for yourself, or?
Yeah, I hadn't worked in a while. I think I did a short film with Paddy Slattery. I think at the start around 2012, and we kind of spoke a bit, and he was the first person to ask me, would you ever think of writing, or have you ever thought about it? And I hadn't really, and then I got this idea and I wrote a short, and then I wrote another one kind of pretty much a month or two later, and then the third one I wrote was In This Place, And each of them I sent to Paddy. He was kind of the first person I'd send them to and give feedback. And he liked the other two, but when I sent him in this place, he was like, there's something, you know, there was something there. He could tell it was kind of something that I knew, not that I knew about, but, you know, he just thought there was something there. He was like, you should work on this one, develop this one more. And that's the one that I went, that we made first.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, we should get Paddy on, actually. Yeah, point.
Yeah.
For people who don't know, Paddy, maybe just explain how you got to start working together. And
Paddy, that was the first time I met him, 2012. We did a short together called Runner.
Yeah.
And it came through a guy we both know, Christian Cote.
Yeah.
He's a storyboard artist. Me and Paul did a web series about 7 years ago called Mr. Donkey. And and he was a storyboard artist, Christian, who directed it.
Right.
And he rang me one day and he goes, oh, I've had this guy, Paddy Slattery, on the phone. He wants me to storyboard a short for him, he said, but I've just read the script. And he was like, all I could see was you. So okay. I was like, send over the script.
Cool.
So he sent the script, I read it, and I rang him back and I said, right, you need to get me an audition for this. I sent him my showreel and I said, send this to him if it's not cast. And then like half an hour later, Paddy rang me and we were on the phone for about an hour.
Right.
And I went in for an audition and yeah, got it. And that was our first meeting. And we've worked together like 5 times since.
Wow.
He produced Today,
yeah,
my second film. He co-produced A Break in the Clouds with me. We've done 2 more of his films and and we've won kind of next year that we're doing. So it's been...
Yeah, his feature? Is that what you're working on that together? Maybe tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, it's called The Broken Law of Attraction. It's kind of it's been going a long time. We're kind of like, but I played the lead role, Dave Connolly, in it. We're hoping to get it up and running by kind of March, April next year. But it's a story of 2 brothers. My character is a guard, and his brother kind of comes back after being away for a while. Kind of the troublesome younger brother, and it's kind of how my loyalty to the law is tested when he comes back and brings a lot of baggage with him. That should be next year.
Cool. So then going back to the first one that you wrote, just tell us about the production and how it all came together.
We did a funder campaign for about, we looked for 3,000 and we got that, and we shot it in Connemara over three days. It was summer 2013. It was strange, you know, shooting in my local area and in the pubs and stuff. It was, you know, you've all your mates and stuff as extras in the bar.
Yeah.
It was like 8 o'clock in the morning in a shutdown bar with the windows blacked out and all your mates come hungover from the night before. And it's they just open a tab and everyone's kind of like, the extras shouldn't be drinking. And the next thing, it's like 12 o'clock and you forget you're doing a film.
Yeah.
You think you're in the, it's nighttime. It was a great, looking back, it was a great experience. It was, you know, it wasn't plain sailing, but we didn't have to do any reshoots and we were about 9 months editing it. And then we premiered at the FLA in 2014. Yeah.
Right.
So, and it did really well.
Yeah.
It did really well, kind of considering we got to Cork and, you know, got to travel a bit with it. And, you know, for a first film, people really kind of responded to it.
Mm.
And a lot of people kind of connected with it.
How important is your own support structure in terms of your friends and family in these projects? I mean, they kind of go above, from what I know of you.
The first one I kind of did on my own. I kind of had this thing in my head where I didn't really want anyone to know that I was doing it or that I had written it, or I don't know, because of what was involved in it. My parents or family, they had nothing to do with it, really.
Okay.
My sister helped me. But the second and third ones, I was more forthcoming with them. They did all the cooking. My mum did all the cooking. And she was making beds and putting people up. And like, we used my dad's farm and his tractor and all his cows and stuff and trailer for today. He kind of, you know, he was... And it was actually, he'd a good chat with Law. Him and Lawler really hit it off on Today.
Okay.
And they had a little chat, and that's where Lawler got his improv for the scene that we improvised with the calf. The calf was born while we were shooting the loft stuff. You know, have you seen Today?
Yeah, I've seen it, yeah.
While we were shooting the loft stuff, the calf, we had to stop because there was a calf being born downstairs.
Because
when I got up that morning, my owlet had been up since like 5 a.m. sitting drinking tea, and he was like, that fucking calf now is going to, cow's going to calf now today, I bet, when you're abroad in that shed. And so it was, we were going for lunch and my owlad and Lawler were looking over the fence, just looking at the calf, talking, and when we went to improv that scene with the calf, we kind of spoke with Lauren and said, look, we might do work something in with this calf. It's kind of seems to be.
Yeah.
And he just used what my outlet had told him, you know, about that he'd been up all week waiting for the calf and kind of stuff like this. That's like, that's a great actor when you just kind of, you know, tap in and just kind of listen and take it all on. And, and the same with Johnny, like he didn't know what Lauren was going to say, but the fact they were just really just listening to each other.
Yeah.
Like 100% just listen to each other. There was no like waiting for their turn. It was just, and the responses, like it was such a great scene. They just, one of my favourite scenes, and they just, the two of them just, you know, went with it.
And like to your three shorts, basically,
kind of
looking at
it,
like, part of it, like, you know, you're able to pull in those favours, but you're very lucky to be from somewhere so beautiful.
Mm.
But it, your stories, you, that you seem to be interested in telling rural stories, or is that just by accident, or is that by design?
No, I think, I like rural stories, and I think the next, you know, the next couple I'll make will probably be rural stories. I don't know, there's just, I find there can be great drama and great stories just in the everyday and the, you know, the films I love don't really have a hell of a lot going on in them sometimes. They can be very simple kind of human stories of, I don't know, I guess there's a lot of struggle in my films as well. There's a lot, you know, I don't know, the kind of, the smaller percentage interests me, you know, the kind of, the people on the margins, the small kind of stories kind of interest me. I don't know why, and I think it's like, I don't think I set out to make a film on either of them topics.
Right.
You know, either something happened or something I saw or something kind of a story someone told me and it was like, oh shit, and it sticks with you, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I didn't set out to go, I'm going to write a story about, you know, postnatal depression. It wasn't it wasn't like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have a process when you write? Do you, is there a specific way you work? Do you sit down and bang it out until, or you know, bang those keys until something comes out? Or
I don't sit down until I kind of have, if I have a really strong sense of a couple of scenes, I'll write them. But sometimes I won't write until in my head I've got it worked out kind of in beats, start to finish.
Yeah.
And then I'll sit down and I'll do a draft. So I'll just like sleep on it for whatever, however long, just thinking, just go in and you just play it out. And then sometimes, but if I, like with the feature I'm writing, I had this big scene in the middle. So just the most ridiculous way to write a feature, write a scene in the middle. And then I had my ending, so I wrote the ending, and then I wrote the start, and then I kind of stuck it together. And when Paddy rang, he said you could feel the joins in it, you know, and you're
right,
so it's just smoothing them out. But if I have a strong scene or characters or a situation, I'll write them. But sometimes, like with today, I didn't write it till I had the start, middle, and end. And the same with the break in the clouds, you kind of wrote it in a.
They come quite naturally second time round, or were you know
which
for today.
Writing, that was one draft.
Just that was it.
Yeah, that was one draft. Yeah, it was like and, and it's naive, you know what I mean? It's naive because that's what I have a tendency to do is write it once and think it's finished, you know? And I think everyone does that.
Yeah.
You know, they write and they're like, it's done. You're like, you send it off in an email and you're like, oh, read this. And then the next day you're like, oh, Jesus Christ, what did I send that for? But I guess with today I sent it out and the people I sent it to were like, we love it. Yeah, it's, you know, Paddy was like, it's ready to do. And then we sent it to Lawler and John and they loved it. So I was like, okay.
And again, was it self-financed kind of thing?
Yeah, Paddy financed today.
Okay.
Yeah, Paddy financed today and we co-financed A Break in the Clouds with Short Screen actually screened the two films today and in this place.
Okay.
So I just put the money I got from Short Screen. So co-funded by RTE, you could say, in a roundabout way. It was like, you know, this is money I wouldn't have. It came from film, so I was, I hadn't done anything. So it was like, right, I need to pull the finger out.
And today did particularly well for you. Right?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, we won the best debut drama at Galway, which was a shock. It was a shock, but it was great. It was great, and we picked up another couple of awards. But yeah, and the same, a lot of people didn't like it, but then I think the people who liked it really liked it and they really got it.
Yeah.
And then I guess some people again thought it was a bit hard or a bit kind of, you know, I don't know, but it's not everyone's cup of tea. These films aren't, you know, they're not everyone's cup of tea. And but the thing is, like we had a screening down in in the college in Letterfrack, and a guy came up to me and John afterwards, and we were nearly in two. He came up and his friend had committed suicide about a month or two earlier,
right.
And he was just in tears to us, just telling us, you know, how much he loved it and that. Yeah. And he went off, and John just turned and he said, "That's why you fucking make films, you know."
Yeah, yeah.
And it was so true. It was, you know,
yeah.
Little things like that, yeah. Where is kind of that makes making a film like that worthwhile, not, you know, because it isn't going to be everyone's cup of tea, and I don't, you can never please anyone. So yeah. You're kind of, you make films that you think you're happy with and hope everyone, you're not, you know.
And you got brought over to New York for that one.
We were on the same flight, weren't we?
Yeah,
that was good crack over the Terrence.
I think it was John Connor's first time in New York. He was like a kid.
Yeah, and he was raging as well because he was sick. He was on tablets.
Oh, yeah.
He was... I was delighted though, because it meant he had to behave himself, you know? Because we stayed like... Did you stay on extra?
We were just there for 4 or 5 days, I think.
Yeah, I think we stayed for 6 and we rented an Airbnb in Williamsburg, and so he was like on his best behaviour. I was delighted. Chasing around after
Bell's palsy or something.
Oh,
sorry.
No.
And the pictures from it are funny. He had to angle his face one way. That was good old crack, the crack fest, yeah.
So this brings us, I suppose, nicely to your most recent short, Breaking the Clouds. How did that break ground, or how did that happen, or why did that happen?
It came when I visited a friend who just had a baby. The baby was maybe only a few weeks or a month old at the time, and I remember just how nervous he looked and kind of how just on edge and stressed. And I remember sitting there and just... I actually started to get really anxious. I started, like, thought I was going to have a panic attack looking at him, and I was thinking just that, the gravity, I suppose, of the thought of it. And another friend of mine had been really struggling as well, like, started taking panic attacks. He'd never had them before, and just, yeah, a couple of people I knew were really struggling, and that kind of stuck with me. I remember thinking, how would you deal with something like that, do you think, if, you know?
Yeah.
And I didn't think quite well, you know, obviously, but that's kind of where it came from. That's where the idea came from. And that kind of, I had an idea of it, and then it just stuck around for like a year until then I just wrote a draft of it, and then I parked it for another, I actually sent it to a funding thing, and it didn't get shortlisted, so then I just kind of left it aside, and then I met Gemma Leah through Paddy, through the feature, and he was like, "Oh, you should send it to her for a read." And I sent it to her, and she liked it, and we just started working on it again. And that's kind of how it came about. But it was about two years.
Okay.
It was about 10 drafts or something, right. Which I wasn't used. Okay. Just like, okay. Yeah.
And like directing second time around, did you feel more comfortable this time? Or?
Yeah, I loved it because it was. I think the DP I had was just he was incredible,
right.
Narian. I had seen his stuff before, and we kind of chatted about doing something. And I just asked him. I said, "Look, I've got a low budget, you know, not thinking he'd," and he was up for it. And we kind of met up, and I think everything after we met up, and we went down to Connemara, and we went around all the locations and kind of spent a whole day. And we were just so on the same page, and he was just, you know, he was just like, "You'll have to trust me."
Did you bring him into that early house, the one that? With the blacked out windows at 8 o'clock in the morning.
No. Yeah. And I guess we just, once we had all our shot list down, and yeah, he was just incredible, you know, he just made it.
Yeah.
We were just, and we, even though we had our shot list on the day, there was still a lot of kind of, we were like, right, this might be more interesting, or what do you think of it? And it was very kind of, you know, we changed up quite a few things, but just the whole experience, that made it easier for me, just having, you know, I didn't have to worry when I was on camera and stuff, and I knew I could just ask him, "Was it okay with you?" And I knew that the scene felt okay, and if he was happy, I was happy. Made it easy.
What about directing yourself? What was that like?
I didn't really think about it.
Or was it? Were you just kind of on autopilot?
In
a good way.
We knew what the shot was, so I just had to worry about the performance, and if it felt okay. That was it. You know what I mean? We didn't do more.
Someone dig in, or was there an idea or something that was kind
of no? We had an AD there, yeah, but there was nobody. I was just, if it felt good, you know, I'd say Denarian. You know what I mean? Was it okay?
Was it quicker then that way? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we weren't watching playbacks or anything. We were just kind of flying through it. I didn't have a monitor. I don't really, you know, the lads had one for focus pulling, but it was, no more than two takes for everything, I think. Yeah, we did the whole thing in two takes. And it was fine. It was easy. I was expecting it to be like a, you know, but it wasn't. It's a bit mad when you're kind of running around and someone's asking you, oh, what time's the food, or where are the sandwiches, and who's there, and there's like more everything, phone call coming in, and it's like, right, it's time for your scene, and the thing, you've just put the phone on silent and jump in. It's like, you know, you have to just be there, and sometimes your head's going a million miles an hour, but it worked.
Yeah.
Do you know?
You were comfortable wearing a couple of different hats.
Yeah.
You do it again?
Direct an act?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Okay.
But not... I do it once more, probably.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know.
Depends.
It depends. Yeah. It depends. Yeah. You know what I mean? It depends, yeah.
Cool. And what stage is that at that was doing the rounds on festivals now? Or
Breaking the Clouds?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're in London now on Sunday in the Irish Film Festival London, and then we're in the International Film Festival Wales the following Saturday. So trying to get over to them.
Yeah.
This week, yeah. So we're up for a few awards in Wales as well. So
best of luck.
Yeah, going to try to make the trip.
And what's next?
This evening?
I'm developing another short.
Okay.
Which I'll see. I'm going to just get it ready and kind of send it out to a couple of things. But just writing the feature kind of still the main kind of thing that's just been going on for about 3.5 years. just like every now and again you get the burst of kind of thing and you're like, oh, and then you just put it away for another few months. But it's, yeah, that's kind of the constant, you know, thing that you talk about. It's like that fella says he's writing a book and it just goes on and on and on.
How about, how important is it for creatives to, or even actors, to create their own opportunities in this country, do you feel?
I think it's important. It's very important. If I hadn't made a short, you know what I mean? Like, so much of my work that I've got over the last few years has come from in this place. Like Mark O'Connor saw In This Place at Galway, same Kieran Craig saw it, Carver Gangsters and In View, that they came directly from them seeing the short. Mm-hmm. And lots of things, agent that I got. Huge, because I think you can write something, you know, you as an actor know your strengths, and if you can write something that really plays to your strengths, you know, and get someone to make it, you know, it's so easy to make stuff now. I think you have to. You don't have to, some people get lucky, but I think if you're sitting at home and you've been twiddling your thumbs for 9 months and you haven't done anything and you're giving out that there's no decent scripts out there, or, you know what I mean, which I was doing for long enough. Like, look at your man getting that thing. I'm better than him. You know, you do all this, you sit at home and you get bitter. So just write something. Yeah. Write something. And it's, you know, it's a slog putting something together. But, you know, if you can get a good story and, you know, get it done, it's hugely rewarding.
Mm. Do you think, and would you kind of, we had a chat with Nick Dunning on one of the earlier podcasts, just about your frame of mind. How important is it to be obviously opportunistic, but also positive in terms of future opportunities and stuff? Do you practice any methodology to deal with rejection, or cause this is a circus, you know, we're all in.
Not really. I kind of the rejection never really bothered me, apart from a couple of times when, you know, think you get close with a couple of things and it's a bit of a kick. But no, like I said, I worked door to door sales for Aircom for a couple of years, and that was like, you'd be bulletproof after that, you know what I mean? You'd be like, my dad bought shares off you cowboys, and you'd be like running down the road. And I kind of just, you just think you're not right for that for some reason, and you just move on.
So
I forget about things.
You make peace with it.
I forget about things very, very fast now. As soon as I walk out of the room, I forget about them, and I don't really let it bother me. I think it helps when you're. That's what the writing and stuff helped with. I felt like I wasn't just pinning all my. I was like, right, that wasn't for me. If I was just an actor, I'd be like, oh shit, you know what I mean? That was my chance of working in the next thing. But I think when you're creating your own work, it takes some of the focus off that. And I think when you're so focused on something, sometimes you can I think it's when you let go of it and you kind of leave it out there. You know, things come to you, you attract more things. Than
well, it's that kind of spinning plates thing. You know, if you've three or four plates spinning at the same time, if one falls, you're looking at the three that are still up.
You're not just like waiting for the phone to ring because that's your only job. You need,
yeah, there's
you know?
Less of a sense of, I guess, of kind of desperation or panic. You know,
yeah.
That was my chance. Or that was my inroad to whatever it is that you think is important for the next step.
And it's like, you know, I think auditions and that, you just... so many different factors in getting an audition. You just have to go in, do your best, and you know, I can very easily leave them behind once I don't go in and forget the lines or make it up. You know, if you go in and you think, okay, I did okay there, Grant, you just forget about it.
Yeah, I guess so.
Which doesn't happen very often, you know. I usually forget lines or something.
Well, unless you're me, because I do that all the time. so yeah, how I just want to just talk very quickly about Connemara in your work. How big of a character is Connemara in your work? Or what is it about Connemara to you? Now, obviously it's home, but like, what is it that's so very cinematic? And why should, like, you know, why should more people not be down there shooting?
I know, I like the kind of fact that it can be very, dependent on your frame of mind, it can be very beautiful or a very desolate kind of place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with the stories, I like to have a lot of light and shade in my stories. Although it may look like there's just more shade. More shade. Quite. But I like that chink every now and again. But I think the beauty of the place is always a nice contrast, you know what I mean, to what's going on within the scene and the vastness of it and the, you know, kind of the, like with John and today, it was kind of that real contained claustrophobia of the car and then the stepping out and it's like the wide open spaces and this beauty, which is totally the opposite of what's going on in his head, you know what I mean? He doesn't really appreciate it until maybe a bit later on. So yeah, I think it's a beautiful place and yeah, I guess, yeah.
Very good. Thanks very much, Tristan. That was